How many of you know who Jerry Jones is, right? The owner and GM of the Cowboys. Well, Jerry Jones was interviewed recently at the NFL Scouting Combine. He was interviewed about his team, and they asked him, you know, what are you expecting next year for the Cowboys? And he said something very interesting. He said that he is more resolved than ever before, more resolved than ever before, to end the Cowboys' 28-year Super Bowl drought. Aren't you glad to hear that? He said he was all in. He said, I'm all in this year. And the reporter who interviewed him wrote that the phrase all in just kept popping up in this interview. So he finally asked Jerry Jones, well, what do you mean when you say you're all in? He says, well, this time we're going to just try everything. He says, we're going to do, his words, every solution. He said, that's what I mean by all in. And I'm like, whew, I'm so glad he's finally all in. I guess this means Super Bowl, here we come. Aren't you glad, Cowboys fans, come on, aren't you glad? Like, finally, he's all in. And now we know that they're going to finally end this Super Bowl drought of 28 years. Well, I tell you that because today we're finishing up a series titled Arrow Striker. And this is a series that is inspired by a book by the same name, Arrow Striker, by a young man named Jonathan Hardy. It's a good book. If you like to read, I encourage you to buy the book, whatever format you like to read books. It's a really good, challenging, devotional book. And so we're finishing up this series, Arrow Striker, and today I want to talk about going all in with God. Going all in with God. I mean, if Jerry Jones can do it with his Cowboys, and we can do it with God, right? Go all in with God. So just to recap the story on which this entire series is built. This series is built on a story. It's a little bit of an obscure story that is found in 2 Kings 13. And the story is that there was in the history of Israel, this is about the 8th century B.C., the nation of Israel faced the possibility of being destroyed as a nation, imminent destruction from a powerful nation named Aram, also known as Syria. So the Arameans kept attacking the Israelites, the nation of Israel, and the nation of Israel was struggling to just stay alive. They had a dwindling army, little hope. And so in the midst of this, God revealed a plan to use King Jehoash, who was a new king. His father had died, so he was a new king. So the new King Jehoash and the prophet Elisha to save the nation. So Elisha, the prophet, instructed Jehoash to do something that was symbolic. It was a little bit odd, but it was symbolic. And that was that he was to shoot an arrow out the east window, because that's where the Aramean army was, to shoot an arrow out the window and then to grab the remaining arrows from the quiver and to just hit them on the ground, you know, and to, he just said, just hit them on the ground. And that was to, those two things were to symbolize the type of victory that Israel was going to have over Aram. The type of victory, they were going to destroy Aram. They were going to attack Aram just the way that Aram had been attacking Israel. They were going to turn things around, and they were going to defeat them. However, Jehoash's, the king's lack of faith, his lack of energy, and really, you know, maybe just did things half-heartedly, became a problem because he only hit the ground three times. And the context, the story, the implication is that it was just kind of half-hearted. Okay, this is kind of dumb. All right, I'll do this. Hit the ground three times. And Elisha got angry with him. And he said, because you have done this with a lack of faith, then you're only going to have three victories over Aram. And that's what had happened. They defeated Aram only three times. But despite the initial promise of victory, his failure to really fully follow Elisha's guidance resulted in a missed opportunity for the complete annihilation of Aram. So We've been looking at our own hearts and evaluating what it means to be an arrow striker. In other words, someone who goes all in for God. And maybe you're at a place where you need to take a step toward God. Maybe you're at a place where you need to move away from where you are and get a little more serious. Make a move toward God. I hope that you'll go all in, and I hope that you'll experience the blessing that comes from being an arrow striker. So today, on this last day of the series, as we look at this idea of going all in, I want us to look at a story from the Old Testament about a man named Gideon. A man named Gideon. This is a story of somebody who went all in and initially was afraid to go all in, but he went all in and God gave him the victory. Now, I want to share a story with you before we get to Gideon. This is from the book Arrow Striker. If you've read the book or if you're reading the book, you may have read this already. Or you will have read this already. But Jonathan Hardy in the book Arrow Striker writes about a young man named Dominic. Dominic was a college freshman who was deeply committed to his faith. As a young man in college, first year college student, he was so deeply committed to his faith that he sought opportunities to share his faith with other people. Whether he was in a restaurant or with friends, even in the dorm, he would talk to his friends about Jesus. He engaged in conversations about spiritual matters, and he just wanted to encourage others, to pray with others. And Jonathan Hardy writes that what stood out the most about this young college freshman, Dominique, is that he had a super ambitious goal, spiritual goal. His goal, when you think about this is like crazy. His goal was that he wanted to see 1 million people come to Christ through his efforts. 1 million people come to Christ through his efforts. And he was so committed to this goal that he wrote it out and he put up the goal. It was written and put up on the wall in his dorm room. And he pursued this with all his effort and determination. And so you can read the story. There's a lot of details, but what we do know about him is that after college, this young man founded an organization called Missions.me. I looked it up, and it's still current. It's still doing God's work. Missions.me. And through this organization, he organized outreach campaigns throughout Latin America. Throughout Latin America. One particularly impactful initiative was in Honduras, and this campaign was called One Nation, One Day. One Nation, One Day. And in that campaign, they reached over 1 million people for Christ. And this not only obviously affected the lives of those individuals, but the entire nation of Honduras was affected. And wasn't that powerful? Dominique went all in for God, and this is what God allowed him and helped him to do. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, that's awesome for him, but that's not for me. I could never do something like that. I could never do something that big for God. Well, today I want us to look at somebody who was an unlikely leader. Gideon was an unlikely leader who ended up doing great things for God. This is someone who didn't think he could do much for God. He had to overcome his fears. He had issues. Gideon had issues. I sort of identify with him. In several different ways. He had to overcome his fears. And maybe as we look at a story, some of you will relate to this as well. Just like I have related to this. So in the book of Judges, we read the story of the people of Israel who were already in the promised land. They were in the promised land, but they were struggling to stay faithful to God. They were struggling. It's like, it was a back and forth relationship. They'd be fine. They'd be serving God. And then they'd forget about God and they'd go off and do their own things. So God would raise judges to deliver them from their self-inflicted oppression. Because when they would go away from God, God would allow them to be overtaken by this group of people or this other nation. So that's when God would send judges to help deliver them so they'd be okay. They'd serve God, they'd have peace in the land, but then over time they'd go back to their old ways, so they get oppressed by another nation, so God would send another judge. And this is the pattern that was going on in those days. So this brings us to Judges 6, where this is a period in time where Israel has been bad again, so to speak. And so for 7 years, they've been slaves, they've been harassed, they've been taken advantage of, this time by the Midianites. The Midianites, they had disregarded God, worshipped other gods, and so God had pulled back his blessing, his protection. So they cried out to the Lord, and God called a deliverer to rescue them. And that was Gideon. So let's read in Judges 6:11. Again, these verses will not be on the screen. Follow in your Bibles if you would, for just maximum engagement from all of us here. Judges 6:11 reads like this. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah, not Oprah, but Ophrah, that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. Now, the winepress was literally a hole in the ground. So he's hiding. He's hiding. Verse 12. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." "Pardon me, my lord," Gideon replied, "but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." Now, pause here. In Gideon's mind, the reality of what was going on had eroded his faith. He had no faith, no faith in God. You know, he says here, "You've abandoned us. You've abandoned us." But it was actually the opposite that was true. Israel had abandoned the Lord. So read with me verse 14 now. The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" "Pardon me, my lord," Gideon replied, "but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." Again, Gideon overall has issues, right? He has trust issues, both a lack of trust in the Lord and in other people, and he has a lack of trust in himself. He's a doubter. He's anxious, more anxious than the average bear. He's anxious, right? So verse 16, "The Lord answered, 'I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive.' Gideon replied, 'If now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me. Please do not go away until I come back and bring my offering and set it before you.' And the Lord said, 'I will wait until you return.'" Again, we see Gideon do this a lot. He wants a sign. He wants it to be clear. He doesn't have the faith to just trust God, but he wants to see something. He needs reassurance because of his doubts and his worries. So again, these are his internal issues at work. So the Lord said to him, "I'll wait until you return." Now, verse 19. Gideon went inside, prepared a young goat, and from an ephah of flour, he made bread without yeast. Putting the meat in a basket and its broth in a pot, he brought them out and offered them to him under the oak. The angel of God said to him, "Take the meat and the unleavened bread, place them on this rock and pour out the broth." And Gideon did so. Then the angel of the Lord touched the meat and the unleavened bread with the tip of the staff that was in his hand. Fire flared from the rock, consuming the meat and the bread, and the angel of the Lord disappeared. When Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, he exclaimed, "Alas, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." But the Lord said to him, "Peace, do not be afraid. You are not going to die." So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and called it, "The Lord is Peace." To this day, it stands in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. So let's talk about Gideon and how he ended up going all in. Because we see after this, he went from being a timid follower of God to being very assertive, and he won great victories for the nation of Israel. So what do we learn from this story? We will learn a few things that I want to share with you. The first one is that going all in starts with believing what God says about you. If you want to go all in with God, believe what God says about you. We go back to verse 12. Verse 12 says, when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Now, most scholars believe that the angel of the Lord is actually Jesus in the Old Testament. It's an appearance of Jesus in the Old Testament. We'll see later that, and we've just read this, that Gideon realized this is the Lord in physical form. So this is more than just an angel. This is the Lord that appeared to him. In Gideon's mind, however, there's this little problem. A mighty warrior is opposite of what his circumstances were communicating. Gideon is being oppressed. His people are being oppressed. They're being ruled by the Midianites. And he was hiding. Like I said, he was in a wine press. He was hiding. And the last time I checked, warriors don't hide, especially mighty warriors. They don't hide, right? They run toward the battle. And here he is hiding. Now, I relate to this because as Christians, we're often called upon to believe in things that we don't see. That's part of our Christianity, right? It's called faith. We live this way. We live by faith. And so we're being called and challenged to believe what we don't see. So when the angel of the Lord said, "Mighty warrior," Gideon was like, "What are you talking about?" When you look in the mirror, this might happen to you. When you look in the mirror, you see an insufficient parent. But God sees an amazing dad or an amazing mom. When you look at yourself in the mirror, you might see a failing worker at your job or a failing business owner. But God sees an incredible servant, a hard worker, an entrepreneur. When you see yourself in the mirror, you might see an average, subpar student. But God sees a graduate in the making. He sees great things for you. You might see in the mirror a broken, failed person, lost person. You can't find your way. But God sees a whole, successful, found child of God. There are many examples in the scriptures about this, where we see stories of some that felt that they were unqualified or they felt inadequate, like Moses, who was a stutterer. He says, "God, I can't even speak." And yet God saw in him the characteristics of a great leader. Or Solomon, who was too young and maybe too unwise to be a king, but God saw a man who could use his wisdom like nobody else. Peter saw in himself, no doubt, a sinful man, especially after he denied Jesus three times. But God saw in him a fisher of men, and Jesus saw in him an apostle to the early church. So believe what God says about you. Don't get fooled by the circumstances you might find yourself in right now at this moment. We do the same thing with our children, don't we? Have you ever told your children, "You can do this"? We tell them, "You can totally do this." Have you ever used your family name? "You're a Hernandez. You can do this," right? You tell them, "You can do this." We want them to believe and want them to have faith and trust in themselves and what God can do through them. So why do we struggle to believe what God says about us? I want us to read some verses out loud here. Some identity statements. I had about four or five, but I just narrowed them down to two because I just want us to read these out loud. The first one is 1 Peter 2:9. 1 Peter 2:9. We're going to have it up here on the screen. And I want you to read this together with me out loud, and I want you to believe this. You ready? 1 Peter 2:9. Here we go. "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His wonderful light. You are God's special possession. I love to have my grandkids get up on my lap, and I just want to squeeze them and hug them and say, I love you. You're so special to me. That's God speaking to us. Now look at 1 John 3:1. Read it in a strong voice. Read it with confidence. Believe this. 1 John 3:1. Here we go. See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. That is what we are. We are children of God. Now, how do these truths impact how you live? Well, if you believe that you're really the child of God, the Lord, Most High God, then how should that impact your self-talk? Stop calling yourself a failure. Stop calling yourself, I'm just a nobody. I'm dumb. I'm stupid. God would not say that about you, so don't say that about yourself. I'm a nobody. Don't do that. Because we are God's special possession. This is important because when you start to believe these truths about yourself, you can turn the direction of your life around. You can turn the direction of your life around because what you believe about yourself will help determine your future. So Gideon wasn't experiencing the security, the peace, because there was a gap between what he believed about himself and who he really was in God. So believe what God says about you. And secondly, let's learn this. Let's learn that in order to go all in, we must believe that God is with us. So believe that God is with you. He's with you through everything you go through everything, every situation. Look at verse 16. Judges 6:16 reads like this. The Lord answered, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive. So he's saying, look, you're never alone. Whatever you face, and you're going to face the Midianites who have been attacking you and have had you oppressed for 7 years, but I am going to be with you. I'll help you. You'll never be alone. You know, when you live knowing that you're never alone, that there's a God in heaven, but not just in heaven, He's in you. Think about that. He's in you. You can have the confidence to face whatever life throws at you. And how many of you know that life can throw a lot of things at us? And sometimes, have you ever had that feeling where everything seems to converge at the same time? Somebody gets sick, your car breaks down, your boss gets mad at you and tears into you, and then one of the kids is misbehaving. It's like, God, why is everything happening at once? That's the way it is. Many times. But because He lives in you and because He's with you, you can have the confidence to face whatever life might throw at you. You have the ability to take the next step in just going all in for God. So I guess the real question is, how do I know that God is with me? How do I know? Sometimes we do need help knowing that. You know that? Sometimes we do need help. My vision is not perfect. Those of you that wear glasses or contacts, right? You understand. My vision is not perfect. So I need glasses to correct my eyes. I either need glasses to read or I need to make the font bigger, right? Usually when I preach, I make the font bigger because if I use glasses, a glare shows up in the video and there's glare in my in the lenses of my glasses. That's why I don't preach with glasses, but the font's bigger because I need help to see. You could say that my eyes are weak and without something to strengthen them, I can't see clearly. So I need something to help me. Lenses or bigger font, right? Now, in this life, we see God through our eyes of faith. But if your eyes of faith are weak, They might need something to help you believe what you're seeing. Even if your eyes are weak, you'll have trouble believing truths, things that are true in God's Word, things that are 100% true, but you need to strengthen your eyes of faith. You need to strengthen your faith. That's why doing things to cultivate your faith is very helpful in believing what God has said to you and about you. As a Christian, you have God living in you, but you may not feel like it. Sometimes God seems so far away. You don't feel like God is in you. He is, but you need something to strengthen your faith. You need something to strengthen your eyes of faith. This is why it's such a good habit to daily, regularly read the scriptures. Read the Bible and let it speak to you. Let it bless you. Let it challenge you. Taking time to pray every day. Gathering together for worship like you've done this morning. This is important. This helps us to strengthen our faith. You stay away, then the more you stay away, the easier it is to stay away. And before you know it, you have doubts. And I don't know if I even believe in God anymore. Because coming together strengthens your faith and it helps you to believe that God is with you. So there's just times that you have to have God help you strengthen your faith so that you're not captivated by fear. Well, let's finish this. The third and the final thing I want us to draw from this is not only to believe what God says about you and to believe that God is with you and in you, but believe what God declares. Believe what God declares, what He pronounces, what He says. Verse 23, but the Lord, this is Judges 6:23, but the Lord said to him, peace. Do not be afraid. You are not going to die. He said, peace. Do not be afraid. You are not going to die. Now, when God says something, it comes into existence. When God said, let there be, a world came into existence. When God said, let there be light, there was light. When God said, let there be stars, there were stars. Let there be a sun and a moon. So God says one word here to Gideon, one word that totally changes what Gideon thought about God. He just simply said, peace, peace. Because more than likely, like many people today, Gideon thought that God was angry at them. God is just an angry God. That's why He has forsaken us. That's why He has forsaken His people. But in that moment, I believe he saw God for who God really is when God said peace to Gideon. It's an interesting word, peace. It's a noun version in the Hebrew, right? The word is shalom. A lot of times, though, when we try, and I don't speak Hebrew or Greek. I have to rely on Greek lexicons, on Hebrew dictionaries and so on, and what others have written. But here's what I've learned is that just because a word means one thing in one verse, one portion of the Bible, doesn't mean that it means the exact same thing in another setting. You have to look at what, you know, the connotation is in that setting. And so the word shalom means peace. But in this setting, it's a variation that literally, given the context, is as if God were saying safe or safety. In other words, He's telling Gideon, you're safe. You're safe. You know what Gideon thought about himself? We've already talked about that, right? And so he didn't feel safe. He's hiding. He felt in danger. And some of you maybe don't feel safe. Some of you maybe as children didn't feel safe, and that's carried on to your adulthood, and you don't feel safe in this world. And God is saying to you, peace, you're safe. You're safe in my hands. That's what we need, to know that we're in God's hands. He has spoken that over you. He's speaking things over you. In fact, and I didn't look up the verse, but I'm thinking of a verse in the Bible that says that God sings over us with great joy because He loves you. And He's saying to you that you're safe. So I want us bring us. I want to bring this back to where we are today, because of Jesus coming to earth, He's made it possible for us to experience peace with God. Peace with God. Romans 5:1, Paul wrote this: "Therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ." This is why Philippians says in Philippians 4:11 and 12, Paul says, "I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned," and here it is, "I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want." So what we understand is that contentment is inner peace. Contentment is internal peace. Peace is what we want, and the only way to truly experience this inner peace, lasting peace, this feeling of safety and contentment is through Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace. Nothing can give us inner peace. Not fame, not a specific, you know, marriage to a specific person, as good as that might be and as blessed as that might be. Not even good health can bring us inner peace. And so today, if there's something that's holding you back from going all in for God, and if that something is fear, like it was for Gideon, it was fear, I want you to know that God is speaking to you, and He's speaking not just that you are a mighty warrior, you are a great woman of God, you're a man of God, you're a servant, you're a young woman who's going to accomplish great things for God. You're a young man. God is going to use your passions, the things you're passionate about. You're a young lady, whatever you're passionate about, whatever occupies your thinking and what you want to do with your life, God's going to use that in your life. And God not only tells you who you are, but God says peace. He speaks peace. He declares peace, safety, contentment, inner peace. He speaks that over you today. So don't be afraid of doing great things for God. Don't be afraid of getting, you know, finally going in and not just living in the peripheral of Christianity, just kind of, oh, I go to church, but I'm just kind of there, but going all in with God. So verse 24, last verse we're going to read today, reads like this: "So Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and called it, 'The Lord is peace.' And to this day it stands in Ophrah of the Beezrites." And Gideon would go on to defeat the Midianites against incredible odds. We're not even getting to that story, but against incredible odds. He defeated a whole army. Remember this? You know the story. With only 300 men, he went up against thousands of warriors and they won. How can a man, a young man who was full of fear and insecurities, do that? Because he believed God. He built an altar as a reminder that God was with him, that he was a mighty warrior. Today, God is inviting you on a spiritual journey. He wants you to experience His peace, His power. But we've got to decide, I will take the steps to go into this journey and to begin this journey. I will be an arrow striker. It will make a difference. Can you imagine if every one of us here today would become an arrow striker? If we were to be like King Jehoash and Elisha said, strike the ground. I'm going to strike the ground because I'm all in with God. I'm going to strike the ground with energy, with faith, with belief. Instead of saying, oh, here we go again, it's church again, same old thing. Can you imagine what this church would accomplish? Can you imagine if every one of us believed this and if we stepped into this journey of faith, what we could accomplish individually and as a church? Can you imagine what Easter is going to be like this year if we all just take this step of faith? That's what God is calling us to do. Would you bow for prayer? Father, we're so thankful for Your word. We're thankful that In spite of the fact that you know us, Lord, you know our insecurities, you know our failures, you know how we speak to us, to ourselves. When nobody's around, we say, you're so stupid, you're so dumb. What kind of a father are you? What kind of a husband are you? What kind of a student are you? You can't even pass this class. What kind of a worker are you? Lord, those are not your words for us. Because you tell us, you're my child, you're my special possession. And maybe somebody here today is feeling like they're such a failure. God, I'm a failure. Maybe they're thinking, my marriage is a failure and it's my fault. Or I lost my job and it's my fault. So many things that we all go through. We all go through those moments. Lord, I pray that you would help us to build our lives on you, on your love for us, that we might learn to trust you and to accomplish great things for you. I want to be a real arrow striker, believing, going all in. I pray for those, dear God, that right now they've been feeling, because the enemy has spoken to them, has deceived them, and they've been feeling down like they're failures, they're no good. Help them to know your love right now.